Welcome back to the Meaning Time Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the host's favorite play of all time is Corn Dog, because it has the word dog in it. That's Lenny. Mike Gold Jr., the Kansas City Chiefs are your Super Bowl 58 champions. They won because of Corn Dog, which is sort of that short, the fake motion that we saw in the Eagle, the last Super Bowl against Philadelphia, used at the very end with Mecole Hardman, another blast from the past in a way. What was your reaction to seeing that play win the game in overtime for Kansas City and the fact that it was Mecole Hardman?
A lot of yelping. I think I woke my neighbor up upstairs. The fact that Andy Reid, of all people, wins on a Corn Dog Redux seems like the most appropriate ending to what was the least likely Mahomes Super Bowl team, I think, in the now dynasty that we can officially call it. And it also made me hungry because we're recording this at night right after the Super Bowl.
I think we can officially call them a dynasty because with Super Bowl wins, they enter I think it's five teams of all time that have three or more Super Bowl wins. Obviously, most recently, the New England Patriots. But and for that, the Cowboys, the Steelers dynasty, you guys know the drill. But yeah, I think how we will remember this season, this game, is Patrick Mahomes probably carrying the worst offense one would think he'll ever have. We, in the second half of this podcast, are going to talk about the Chiefs moving forward, the 49ers moving forward as well. But tonight, we're going to start by talking about this game. At halftime, you and I were texting throughout. At halftime, I think the narrative or the story of the game was just the Niners defense dominating Kansas City up front, which was interesting because this is a Niners defense that, you know, had gotten a lot of criticism in the postseason. I was very critical of them. I didn't think they'd be able to stop the run. At times the pass rush wasn't as impressive as it's been in the past, certainly given all the talent on the defensive line. They had missed a bunch of tackles at, you know, key points in the playoffs as well, but they really showed up. And I want to say, like, start to finish, they played well. Obviously the final drive, the greatest quarterback did his thing, but for the most part, Mike, this was a very impressive game from that defense.
They made Patrick Mahomes, in what you're absolutely correct in saying might be his masterpiece of this Super Bowl run, look incredibly ordinary in that first half. And we'll, I think, talk a lot about some of the Steve Wilks decisions in the waning moments of this game in terms of critical third down calls there, because in the first half, it was largely done off the backs of the 49ers four-man rush. The much maligned Chase Young kickstarts the party with a sack early in the game where he beats Donovan Smith clean. Nick Bosa and that whole D-line did such a great job, and it was highlighted on the broadcast, rushing with great lane integrity, making sure that they kept Patrick Mahomes in the pocket. And when he was forced out, it was at angles where even he couldn't make plays, especially given the way this 49ers secondary was playing. And so that group up front, Fred Warner flying all over the field, making plays at linebacker, really had them looking like the group that 49ers fans saw for the majority of the season and not the group they got for the last month and a half.
Yeah, I think you highlighted a lot of the things that impressed me, the gap integrity, the fact that they were, you know, because they had been punished so much for being overly aggressive that front, not the case. And it wasn't just like Nick Bosa. I thought the whole defensive line, Hargrave, Kinlaw had some big plays in this game, was really impressive. I also suspect when we get the tape, we will see very impressive coverage from the TV broadcast. It looked like guys were pretty covered up, you know, in the first half. You did mention the Steve Wilks blitzes. So Mahomes was 5 for 6 against the blitz in this game. So he only blitzed him on 12.5% of his dropbacks. But when he did, for the most part, I would say actually not for the most part, because some of those completions were short of the sticks. So then that obviously is counted as 5 for 6. But it was really that final third down. It was the 3rd and 6, the crosser to Rice, that I think will get some scrutiny, perhaps, especially in overtime, especially considering that the defensive line had been so dominant. What did you make of that decision? Do you think that the feeling was they didn't think their four-man rush was going to get it done, that perhaps the blitz would also keep Mahomes from escaping with his legs, because it did leave Rice open, and it did spring him for a big game as well, obviously the first down.
Yeah, and remember, there had been one prior to that where they snuck, I think it was Jerick McKinnon out of the backfield on a running back pass to the flat on another blitz look before that one. I forget if it was in the third or fourth quarter leading up to it, but I don't know if it's one of those where, you know, you see Spags having all the success with it over on the other side where he's throwing haymakers every third and fourth down way he usually does, and you're trying to return volley, or, you know, it, you mentioned the four-man rush and them not being able to get home. There was a lot of chatter in terms of strategy at the end of the game surrounding the legs of both teams in those waning moments when you have those guys turning it loose time and time again. You wonder if the thought to your point was, hey, maybe these guys' legs aren't under them quite the same way. The burst isn't quite the same. And so we want to throw a few extra bodies there to see if we can get somebody to make the wrong decision inside, turn somebody loose. I'm sure Niners fans are probably going to want holding on the running back there. I think Fred Warner got hooked a little bit, it looked like, potentially, but blitzing one of the greatest quarterbacks against the blitz of all time is always going to draw you a little bit of scrutiny given the caliber of player he is.
Yeah, I think the final drive in overtime. So just to recap, I don't know why you would be listening to this if you didn't watch the game, if you're finding out what happened. It was really interesting because we finally got to see the new overtime rules, right? Where, which, you know, so previously, as you guys, I'm sure know, if you scored on the first drive, you could finish the game, the San Francisco four. But now with the new rules, the second team has a chance to possess. Interesting debate over whether you should take it first or take it second. My preference would be to take it second because then you know whether you have to score, so you have all four downs, and then you could potentially go for two to win, which I was actually terrified would happen, but it did not happen because the Niners ended up kicking a field goal on the first drive. And I want to get to that in a second when we talk more about the Niners offense and that, but I thought the game-winning drive was just, which, you know, they did score a touchdown, was like a pretty perfect encapsulation of this Chiefs season because, you know, there weren't explosive balls through the air. You had a Chiefs receiver, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, making a very, going backwards and losing several yards on a play. You had Patrick Mahomes probably making the biggest play of the game. The touchdown throw was really nice. That was probably his best throw of the game, but using his legs for a 19-yard scramble that ultimately set up the touchdown we discussed, which was the return of Corndog. This, I think, is remarkable. So he scrambled for 66 yards, which is the second most by a quarterback in Super Bowl history. And he now has 172 rush yards total, which is 67 more than any other quarterback. Most of those via scramble. I actually don't know. It looked like he ran zone read, and you and I were like, Patrick Mahomes ran zone read at one point during the game. Mitch Schwartz, who the former Chiefs offensive tackle, tweeted at me. No, he's like, I think he just kept it because he just saw the look that he wanted. But I think what's so, you know, like I said, it was a perfect encapsulation of season because it wasn't explosive. It was just efficient, taking what was available to him, scrambling. But the scrambling thing really jumps out to me because I just, as we think about this player, all of these Super Bowls, all of these performances, there have just been so many key scrambles. And it's funny because that's not the part of his game that any of us ever emphasize, but there's no chance in hell he has all these Super Bowls if he doesn't use his legs the way he does. And so that's obviously what happened on that drive. And it's why they won.
I mean, think about the game ceiling play. I think it was it last year's AFC Championship? They played the Bengals, and it was the late hit by the linebacker out of bounds on a Mahomes scramble that put them in position to win to that game and go to the Super Bowl. I thought about it a lot as I sat there on my couch with my heart beating out of my chest, how nervous we all were watching that game. And in the moment for this guy, you saw it on all the pivotal downs and distance. And there are so many factors that come into play with that. One of them you mentioned, hey, where they ended up with the ball second. I saw our buddy Sam Schwartzstein say information triumphed over that sudden death edge that you would have gotten that third possession, because at every spot, Mahomes knew exactly what was available to him, exactly how many downs they were going to have, because fourth down was going to be the go after the other team had scored. All of these things gave one of the most clutch players in our lifetime, an excess of information. And they had mixed just enough of that threat in there all game. Like there was a play earlier in the game where I think it might've been either the waning moments of the first half or towards the end of the game where Mahomes tried to take off on a scramble up the middle. And it was down in the red zone with the clock running down. It was probably ill-advised because it ends up costing them time. That was the one where Romo was in the broadcast booth imploring them to go up there and spike it potentially to try and save some time there. But it's, I think Mahomes constantly displaying that threat of his legs that keeps that 49ers defense off balance enough to make that viable when the game goes on the line.
That's a great point about, how it influences the way defenses play them. Myles Garrett talked about that a little bit this week. He another thing he talked about, by the way, I interviewed Myles Garrett for YouTube. You should check it out. YouTube, if you're here, you're watching on YouTube, it's youtube.com/AtMinaKimes. Another thing Myles Garrett talked about that I really thought was significant in this game, because so I interviewed him and I asked him about how the Browns had played the Niners well. And one of the things we discussed was Mahomes' legs and talking about the Super Bowl. And another thing he mentioned was when they played them. And, you know, it's a very different defense from the Chiefs, much more reliant on the four-man rush, obviously. Spag splits the hell out of Purdy. But he said, actually, the defensive tackles are the most important players in this game because in playing Brock Purdy, rather. And, you know, Myles Garrett is an edge rusher. He said, because, you know, one of our coaching points going into it was – get your hands up because you can bat his passes. And he was saying even, and we had that in mind, even when we were like running games where, you know, you switch positions between the edge and the defensive tackle, just so important to get in front of him and be big. And I think you really saw that in this game. Actually, I just saw it from our stats and info group when the Chiefs defense created pressure from the interior, the Niners averaged less than 2 yards per play. Which when they had pressure from the edge, the Niners averaged 9.1 yards per play. Stark difference. And Mike, I thought Purdy did some good things in this game, particularly the scramble where he extended and hit Juszczyk near the end of the game was really impressive. But I also thought he was clearly impacted by the size of the Chiefs pass rush at times.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing we come away from this postseason run, especially knowing for sure, it's that, and I think it's going to be interesting when we talk about what these teams do moving forward, because I think there's going to be a premium on the personnel that they potentially add along the interior of that 49ers offensive line. And we know with Kyle's offense, they like to do a lot of getting them on the perimeter. I thought the Chiefs D-line especially did such a great job. You saw multiple plays, George Karlaftis, Chris Jones, both with discipline enough on the backside to recognize, hey, this is play action trying to wash us down the line and get in Brock Purdy's face to make him uncomfortable on the plays that are supposed to be there to help out a quarterback with a size disadvantage by moving the launch point and getting him on the perimeter. But in most of the games in the playoffs where we saw the 49ers get down against Green Bay and against the Detroit Lions, it was competent interior rushers and some of the situations that Spags and that blitz forced the offensive line into from the neck up that gave them opportunities and free hits on a guy that, is small. Like we saw it pop up in the cold when the wet game, when the 49ers played the Packers, like he's a smaller quarterback. He's got small hands. There's certain place those limitations are going to match up. He also made some really good plays with pressure being put right back in his face. So you and I were kind of texting about it. It's hard to really look at this and go, Brock Purdy lost them the game at any one juncture. He largely played pretty well, but this is one of the best defenses in the NFL. And at times they bared their teeth.
I think that's what's so tricky for the San Francisco 49ers performance is I don't really point to anything as being like the single biggest reason they lost this game. You could say, well, Wilkes shouldn't have blitzed on third down there. Or maybe if Purdy makes a few more plays under pressure, or I don't know, you know, there were obviously they had the special teams, the muffed punt as well, which is, you know, things are the missed extra point. Like there's a lot of little things you can point to, but it wasn't like one unit or one player to me was disappoint. Like just, it was obviously their fault. I'll extend that to Kyle Shanahan. I don't think anyone could watch this and say he called a bad game. You certainly couldn't say he didn't run the ball enough. They ran the ball a fair amount, I think, in the right situations. I guess there was a couple points where he could have been more aggressive, but he went for it on that one fourth down. I wasn't sure if he would. I think maybe like the taking the ball first would be the one thing in overtime. Like I like I said, I would have taken it second, so you have the information. But this is not 28-3 by any means, even if they were up 10 points. And by the way, speaking of mistakes, you know, like the final drive in overtime ultimately, well, first, so they had a successful CMC run, then a second one that was blown up again by the Chiefs defensive line that I thought was pretty impressive. I think it was like Wharton and they're big guys. And then the third down, Chris Jones was lined up at edge, mm-hmm. something that, you know, we talked about a lot. They love to line him up on money downs on edge versus Colt McKivitz. And then he rushed Purdy unblocked. That was one where I was confused in real time. That first of all, not Purdy's fault. I was confused in real time as to what was happening with the protection. What was your take watching that? Because Chris Jones arguably closed the game for Kansas City there.
He did, and he's good enough to do that on his own when he's blocked. We saw plenty of instances tonight where that was the case in matchups one-on-one with Trent Williams, but in that play went completely unblocked. And going back and look at it, I don't fully claim to know the protection rules on this one, but essentially how it worked was they were running a pop protection with the center. So they had both the left guard and the left tackle come crashing down on the three technique and the Mike linebacker that was mugged up over the center. And they had the center back out and then go take the defensive end. It's kind of mimicking a play action protection. You get an interior lineman pulling, maybe try and get a linebacker to start to look down a little bit. And then on the right side, you had at that point, their backup right guard in the game. John Feliciano had gone down, so Spencer Burford was in at right guard, and you saw him go crashing down, and it ended up being redundant. He went down and tried to check the linebacker at first and then peeled back late, while on the right side, you had the right tackle Colton McKivitz kind of throwing a hand on the three technique like he was expecting someone to be there, because on the right side, you had George Kittle chip help on George Karlaftis. He wasn't in the protection where he was staying in there. George was clearly, hey, I'm going to hit, give him a second, and then go out, which means somebody's got to be accounting for the defensive end. And it looked like that's where McKivitz's eyes were. He looks out of sorts, though, because he clearly felt nobody was with him there on the inside. So, again, I want to say this is an educated guess because I don't know their protection. I don't know their rules in that specific spot. But based on context and what I do know, it seems like that was most likely a bust on the right guard, which, again, you got a guy that's in there as the backup, wasn't expected to start the game. And so all of a sudden the bullets are flying fast late against a defense led by Steve Spagnuolo. And this is the thing that happens.
I think you're right, because when you watch McKivitz, he's looking at George Karlaftis and Kittle, to your point, is the outlet there on the play after chipping. So, yeah, it is incredible how many Super Bowls you can, like, the butterfly effect of a single offensive lineman injury, and then suddenly one thing leads to another, and Chris Jones is on third down, is getting to the quarterback, and that's ball game. It's crazy. That's the thing about Super Bowls, like, so many little things, the missed extra point, and I know that's not comfort to Niners fans, but it's in a close game. It really is things like that.
Think about how stupid this game was, where ultimately, Amina, this game swung on a botched punt return where the ball gleans off a special teams player's foot, and Tony Romo tried to explain it on the call. So generally when there was a short punt, because you heard the crowd kind of react, it wasn't a great hit by the punter, and it was coming short, and you saw the punter pointing and yelling, and usually they're yelling Peter or poison, something to let everyone on the return team know, hey, peel off towards the sideline, like, run away from this, get away, because we don't want exactly what happened to happen on that play. But it's a difference of inches where it careens off his foot, and that's the Chiefs touchdown that gets them kind of going at that point. You combine that with a mixed extra point, and you could look at that and say, hey, special teams is a third of the game, and you had two incredibly drastic negatives that happened at that spot versus on the other side. I don't know, maybe it's just because there's more volume of plays, but it feels unfair to afford the same level of blame to the offense and defense, who I think largely played well enough to win.
Yeah. I know we started this pod weirdly by talking about, I was like, the Niners defense is really good, but they were really good in this game. I was really impressed with the run defense, which was going into this game, I thought, you know, it had been such a problem in the postseason. But I think one thing, Dominique and I talked about this on the preview pod on last Monday, and I think I probably should have put more importance on it. We were talking about how much the Niners run defense had struggled against Green Bay and Detroit on those runs off tackle, especially the pin and pull stuff. And we were like, yeah, you know, the Chiefs running rushing attack is different, but they should still have success. Well, they didn't have success. Isaiah Pacheco only carried it 18 times for 59 yards with a 27.8% success rate. That's not good. 14 of his 18 runs were between the tackles. So very different style of running game. And the Niners bowed up. So that wasn't working for them all night.
I do think that was the most interesting. And even the way the Chiefs started, you know, I don't think it was a trap. I think they might've been running counter at the beginning and you saw the defensive line for the 49ers get upfield and they disrupted a lot. I think The thing that surprised me most was, well, one, you mentioned some of the pin and pull stuff. We saw that a couple times, but remember the Isaiah Pacheco fumble to start the second half was on a play that I believe was supposed to be a toss outside the tackles that Mahomes just botched there. And that's one of those spots where I never discount, hey, if you're the Andy Reid is the offensive play caller, when a bad thing happens to a play that you might like, there is that tendency to sort of file it away. Like flip that on the other side. When we were an offense going against a defense, we're like, we know they've got a couple blitzes they want to get to early. And if you shut it down early, human nature is going to take over of a lot of defensive play callers where they're going to shuffle to the next one. They're going to say, all right, let's get rid of that one. They stuffed that up. They were ready for that one. And so for that to stop that there, I thought was impactful. I thought they were going to line up in 12 and 13 a lot more and just run inside zone, like run duo, let them lean on guys up front.
Yeah.
And I don't think we saw a lot of that. We saw a lot more light personnel gun runs. They got heavy, I think, to throw downfield more than they did run. And a lot of those, you know, delayed, you know, counter footwork in the backfield, slow developing softball runs got really gummed up at the line of scrimmage because the Niners defensive front was just aggressive as hell.
So that was something that jumped out to me as well, because when they did run out of 13 personnel, they had success doing so. It was a 50, they averaged 5.9 yards per carry, 57% success rate running with three tight ends on the field versus where when they went light and tried to run the ball, to your point, 2.3 yards per carry, only one successful run. It was not working for them. It felt like in the first half, Andy Reid really didn't have a lot of answers, to be honest. I mean, you know, and there's the fumbles and, you know, whatever, it's weird stuff happens. But I thought there would be more, something I talked about, I thought they would have more success with jet sweeps. They had the one for the, I can't remember if it was the third or fourth down conversion, but they didn't really, I don't know. It felt like they were surprised by the physicality of the Niners defensive line in particular. I was ready to say Steve Wilks, everybody apologized to him, who was critical. and the Niners defensive line. I mean, like some of the players I mentioned, Chase Young. But then, you know, there was the weirdness and, kind of Mahomes. There was a couple points during the game where he kind of clearly just went into F it mode, I thought, where, you know, it was just like, I'm just going to do whatever it takes, whether it's scrambling or extending with my legs. And that, I think, proved to be the difference in the second half.
I think it was interesting to go back. I remember the first half was a largely pedestrian Mahomes half. That you're right. That was when it really looked like the 49ers were just bigger, faster, stronger at every position. You obviously had the Dre Greenlaw injury, which was, it felt big at the time. I don't feel like the Chiefs ever really did a ton to exploit that by and large.
I thought they would get really heavy the whole game from that point on. I texted you. I was like, all right, here comes that 13 personnel, baby.
And they just never quite went with it. But I think what was big for Mahomes and that team and how they went about the rest of the game was that 2-minute drive, where all of a sudden, and I say this all the time, especially for young quarterbacks, a lot of times the 2-minute drive's great because it just gets you out of your head. Like you practice it so much of it is like signal, go, get up to the line, tempo. You're just read and react a little bit more than pressing. And it felt like Mahomes and the Chiefs were pressing a lot in the first half. And I think that drive just kind of got them out of their heads a little bit. So when they had to go back to some of those critical moments in the second half, the pass game out of spread formations was a lot more accessible than it had felt the vast majority of the season.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It took them a second to kind of get to some of their bread or butter concepts that had been working all year long. I think about how they had the back-to-back slants. I think they were both slants to Rice, for example. They couldn't, because the screens just weren't working. The Niners were all over them. And sometimes I feel like it didn't feel like they were a different offense in the second half per se, or that the Niners defense was playing markedly worse, but it felt like, you know, they kind of, you and I talked about this. So many of the drives were getting killed on first down for them. And when that stopped, when they stopped falling behind the chains, you know, this, because they're not an explosive offense, if you fall behind, you're dead. If, whether it's a bad play, a tackle for a loss, a penalty, whatever, a drop. And that was the case, I think, for the first half, certainly.
I laugh just because, and it's going to sound really cliche, but I think given how their offense operated, it's kind of relevant here. 2012, I played at Notre Dame. We went undefeated. We had a really good season that year, largely led by a stellar defense and a very timely offense. We weren't great statistically at anything, but I remember Chuck Martin, who's now the head coach at Miami of Ohio, was our OC, and said, our goal is to just get back to the line of scrimmage, at least on every play. Like, we can't afford negative plays at all. And it sounds so base level, but when you're an offense that needs what they need and needed what we need to succeed, that has to be the most important thing for you. And whether it was penalties or whether it was missed blocks or whatever, you're right. It was their first seven drives the Chiefs had four negative plays on first down, and they absolutely buried them. They weren't able to get through it because the most dangerous matchup for the Chiefs in this entire game was their offensive tackles and a five-man pass protection or a six-man pass protection against these rush ends for the 49ers. And they were killing them in the first half because there were way too many third and eight, third and nine, third and 10 plus plays for them.
I want to wrap this part by giving more love to the Chiefs defense, because we've been talking about how good the San Francisco 49ers defense was. We've talked about Patrick Mahomes and his legs and some of the things they did and what happened in overtime, but the Chiefs defense is really what got them to this point through some of the lows of the season and came up so big in the second half. You know, on the first drive, it really looked like, oh, Christian McCaffrey's going to run the ball at will on this team. Like, they were a sieve. And, you know, he still got his, and he ran the ball efficiently in this game. But you really saw that front seven. I mean, but also the DBs tackled so well, and they tackled, they made so many big plays in this game. We'll get to the coverage aspect of it. But they were so impressive, I thought, as the game went on, against some of the Niners' little toss actions, some of their screens, for example. And this is a Niners team. You know, I'm curious actually to see ultimately where they netted out with yards after the catch, but they are the yak team of the NFL. And there were plays where they got, you know, they picked up their usual yards after the catch, but I thought for the most part, the Chiefs did a pretty outstanding job of tackling.
Yeah, I would agree. At the beginning of the game, and you know, really that first three quarters when we were all kind of wondering, like, is Juwan Jennings going to end up being your MVP here? Because they were throwing a bunch of those layered concepts over the middle. He obviously had the touchdown pass too, but it was just sort of a testament to overall how even the performance had been for the 49ers, where we were kind of struggling even towards the end of the game. Like, who gets the MVP if they end up winning this? Where there was no doubt on the other side. But I do think you're right. That Chiefs defensive front, when you look at especially the big guys in the middle, like Mike Pinnell had a hell of a game against the run, stuffing it up front. Obviously, Chris Jones, George Karloftis had flashed a bunch against the run during this postseason, especially. And so all those guys deserve a ton of credit, especially late in the game, for just bowling their way through this 49ers offensive line.
Leo Chenal, my God. Yeah. That dude was
Bill Barnwell's very own.
I know. I wish I had kept Juwan Jennings as my X Factor from our live show. You know, Mahomes obviously won MVP, not surprising, given, you know, he won the game for them in overtime. I do think before overtime, Trent McDuffie had a legitimate case for MVP. I mean, so he was my first team All-Pro vote for, because they added a slot corner category this year. It's not because I'm biased, because he's a Husky, DBU, but I don't know if, like, he to me is one of like the five defensive players in the NFL I might enjoy watching the most right now. Just the physicality with which he plays. Some of his coverage, he was incredible in coverage in this game. And then, of course, he had that one perfectly timed slot blitz that led to the incompletion. Which is something, you know, had been a hallmark of this Chiefs defense and something that Brock Purdy had shredded this year. but it was so well, I'm excited to go back and watch it on tape because it was so well disguised. Yeah, he was outstanding in this game.
Next Gen Stats said that that was the 16th unblocked pressure this season generated by Trent McDuffie, five more than any defensive back in the NFL, which to your point is equal parts. Hey, Spags has some galaxy brain stuff and some great sense for when to throw things at it. But you're right. You look at so many of these and the body language, the tilt, all the things pre-snap, these guys are so savvy in how they disguise this stuff. We saw on the back end, the secondary did that little loop-de-loop cover two thing where they lined up in cover two and then it looked like they were going to have a rat hole guy and they circled back. Like all these guys are so smart and so savvy, which you have to be to present as much to opposing offenses as they're able to do with Spags at the helm.
And that's, you know, I mean, Brock Purdy is a second year quarterback who, you know, I'd point at some point during the season, I had noted that one of the very few things that he struggled at times was versus disguised coverage. Whereas on the other hand, Mahomes, you had him hitting that whole shot when they went from single high to cover two. And he had, I forget, it was Justin Watson on the drive that sent them to overtime. He saw him, he hit him on the corner on the whole shot.
Yeah.
It is, you know, let's end here. It's Patrick freaking Mahomes, man. We're not ending here. Sorry. We're ending the game discussion here. We're gonna take a quick break. Come back and talk about what's next for these teams.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, DC, Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
Okay, so the 2023 season is in the books. Kansas City Chiefs are the Super Bowl champions. Now, draft season begins. But before we get to draft season And it really does begin like next week. I'm going to start talking about the draft. I do want to take a second to talk about these two teams and what's next for them, which is something I did last week with some of the teams that had been eliminated. Obviously, we'll do this all season, but you know, it's, I think, a really fascinating time for the San Francisco 49ers. I want to start with them because, so we're going to talk about all the free agents and some of the decisions they have to make. They don't have that many decisions, actually. But I think what's so tricky about this team, about this game, is about this coach who keeps getting so, so tantalizingly close and just can't win at all. Is, I don't look at the team and say, Mike, obviously they need this. I mean, sure, it would be great if they had, if they could upgrade to a Patrick Mahomes level quarterback. But candidly, like, I don't know that there's going to be many options for them to upgrade from Brock Purdy next year, who I think played fine in this game. Like, I wasn't watching that and thinking like, oh, they, one team has like a crappy quarterback. It wasn't my takeaway at all. So, and I don't look at them and think like, I mean, like, there are things they could get better at. Offensive line is one of them, although it was ultimately like a backup guard. We talked about that. I think, you know, Purdy was pressured a lot. And if you have a smaller quarterback, I think that should probably be a priority for them, especially the interior of the offensive line, to get better. But yeah, it's just, it's brutal because I don't, like, the defense played really well. We talked about it. Like, I don't look at this team and think there's glaring holes or there's like a very obvious reason other than the fact that on the other side of the field is the best quarterback I've ever seen.
I was going to say, to your point, Brock Purdy led the NFL in pass yards per attempt and passer rating this season. Worth noting, by the way, the last three quarterbacks to do that all lost in the Super Bowl. The last three quarterbacks that I should say did that and played in the Super Bowl. That led the last three quarterbacks that led the NFL in passer in pass yards per attempt and passer rating in the regular season and played in the Super Bowl all lost. Matt Ryan in 2016, Tom Brady in 2007, Kurt Warner in 2001, and now Brock Purdy in 2023. So
Matt Ryan, it's 2016.
Which, you know, more of Kyle, you know, influence in that. But
I felt bad for him. I did. There is probably no coach who has influenced this era of NFL football more than Kyle Shanahan. Can I say that? Is that true? Like, look around the league, man. And he's so good. And some of the play calls, like, we didn't even talk about the freaking double.
Oh, the touchdown to McCaffrey on the throwback by Juwan Jennings. Just ridiculous. Yeah,
which I guess they ran in Tennessee with him because he was a high school quarterback or something.
I saw Matt Fortuna tweeted that he was the highest rated high school quarterback that played in this game.
That's incredible. Jennings. So the concept is I wish I had the dots in front of me. They had Kittle running a deep over and they did everything. They sold the over after the pass back, the backwards pass to Jennings. And I thought, like, no way. Like, no way he's going to make – because that thing looked like it had disaster written all over it because he had pressure bearing down on him, and he got that thing off. I would have actually really pushed for him to be MVP if he had gotten that off. But no, anyways, yeah, sorry. I interrupted. We're talking about Kyle Shanahan, and I'm just sad. I don't know.
It bums me out. It's tough because it's not like there's a lot of pressure. And I heard the stat that came up a lot during Super Bowl week that before Christian McCaffrey had come over, Kyle Shanahan's record overall in San Francisco, I believe, had been under 500 because you had some of those injury blow up seasons in addition to the deep postseason runs. But you're right. He has been part of the coaching tree that is now reshaping the modern NFL in terms of creating an offense that is quarterback friendly. There is no one better in the league currently than that. And in this game, he did slay a lot of the demons in terms of, hey, you know, late game play calling, all these things that we had thrown in his face, even if he kind of lucked into it with the defensive holding that was going to, you know, potentially end a drive where he did throw it like three straight times. But it's largely not his fault. And for the 49ers, it really is just you ran into a force of nature. You're running into something that is all time. You're, you know, the Toronto Raptors, the perennial one seed, running into LeBron James in the East for every year. And so, yeah, I think especially given the opportunity they have, I think the thing we can talk about a lot spinning it forward is next year's their last year of bargain bin Brock Purdy. I believe because of the league rules around when he, like his contract and the way it's structured, they can't actually extend him this offseason, right? They have to wait till next year because of where he's drafted.
Yeah.
So you've got one more year to figure out what are we going to do to make sure that we go all in on this. And I guess, like, you know, they're probably, based on the vibes around Chase Young going into this game, that's probably not going to be someone they re-sign to a free agent deal, at least any one of any significant monetary value. So getting another pass rusher opposite Nick Bosa to help take the pressure off him, certainly a priority if you don't bring him back. And then shoring up the interior offensive line, like we talked about, if you want to try and go all out on getting another stud there, since, you know, you've got your one in Trent Williams on the other side, but then everyone else is largely good players, not great players. But besides that, it's hard to really invent a ton of areas where they need to improve. They just ran into Pat.
Yeah, I think offensive line should be probably the main priority, especially given what we've been talking about with Purdy and interior pressure and a lot of the deficiencies of the offensive line were covered up this season by Purdy's quick release, no doubt. You know, his ability to throw accurately on time. The scheme helped as well. But I think you saw that vulnerability, obviously, in key moments like the Chris Jones pressure that we talked about, was miscommunication, that's backup involved, whatever. But, like, you know, I think there were moments in this game where it occurred to me, like, okay, if Brock Purdy is going to be your quarterback moving forward, you do need to address this, which isn't to say it's like some glaring weakness of his. All quarterbacks need offensive line protection. It just, there were a lot of moments where it just stood out to me that he almost had to like leave his feet a couple of times to get the ball over, you know? And I think, that's what I would prioritize. They don't have much cap space, but they don't have many free agents. Chase Young, Kinlaw, Sean Gibson, Juwan Jennings. They have a lot of free agents in 2025. The list is long. Eric Armstead, Javarius Ward, Dre Greenlaw, Ayuk, Hufanga, Lenoir, McKivitz, Tom. It's like half the deep. But that's, you know, you're going to have to figure out who you're going to prioritize out of that group. But that's a problem for another day. And then obviously Brock Purdy, God, that contract debate's going to be hell on earth. Hell on earth.
But anyways, 2023 was toxic. Wait till 2025.
But yeah, I think, you know, the things you have to do for your roster this year are manageable. But to your point, because this is, you know, his cheap year, I do think you have to go all in, do whatever it takes. You should win the NFC again. I'll pick you. I'm going to pick you. I already know now. Probably. I don't know. Actually, give me a second to think about that. I might pick the Lions. I don't know. But point is, you should go all in. So you're going to have to work the cap a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. I feel bad. I don't know why. I mean, I know why. It's just got to be heartbreaking. Not just for Niners fans, but for, you know, Kyle Shanahan in particular.
I wonder if we get, and I don't, you know how they'd pull this off, but like whatever their version is of like the burn the boats Rams from 2 years ago, Bucks from a couple years ago, where it's just you try and mortgage everything. Because it's, when you were listing off all those free agents and the fact that if Brock Purdy plays this way again, I genuinely don't know what you do with that contract. If he does this for another year in this offense, I don't know how you sit there and call his bluff if you're that team. And so you go from having like the highest paid player at what, four or five positions between offense and defense, to now all of a sudden having to start to do what the Kansas City Chiefs have done, is have the youngest defense in the NFL because you gave your quarterback $500 million.
I think what makes the Brock Purdy contract situation so tricky is, you know, people compare him to Jared Goff, right? Like, oh, Matthew Stafford Sean McVay decided he wanted to upgrade from Jared Goff because he wasn't a playmaker. He's not mobile. But Brock Purdy is a playmaker. He's a second-year quarterback. He's probably going to get better. So I guess that's maybe where we can leave this, which is, they have time to figure it out. They can see if he can improve next season, improve on a season that was undeniably impressive, statistically very impressive. Now, I think he was surrounded by very, very talented players, but he's going to be next year. I think what is complicated is at some point they're going to be less talented, but you'll already have to have made a decision about him before then. So it's not like you're going to get to see, okay, well, I guess you could see when they were injured or whatever, some of those players, and maybe they'll get injured next year. All things considered, they were pretty healthy, but yeah, it's imperfect information. I genuinely don't know how it plays out. I guess all I'll say is he's not why they lost this game.
No, he's not. And quite frankly, if the guy that shows up for them that showed up in the second half of pretty much every playoff game they played this season shows up next year on a consistent basis, you're going to be able to point to him and say, I mean, he's a big part of the reason why, with his legs against Detroit, with his arm against Green Bay, why they won those games despite being down in the first half.
Yeah, if they had won, we would have pointed to the scramble where he hit Juszczyk. It was a great play. Okay, well, on the other side, right after the game, one of the first things Patrick Mahomes said was, "We are a young team. We're going to be back here."
Which, Jesus Christ.
But he's right. It's the youngest defense in the NFL. Now, that said, they do have some notable free agents. Most significantly, the guy that you and I just said closed out this game on defense. He also forced the pressure. That was the overthrow. It would have been a touchdown to Debo. I mean, he had a number of some tackles for loss. Yeah, Chris Jones, you are a Seattle Seahawk. No, I don't know. It feels like he's probably gone, right? So that's but Chiefs fans, like, you're young. I mean, Felix Anadike Uzama had a big TFL in this game out of nowhere. But Karlaftis appears to be like a total hit. Obviously, though, losing Chris Jones would be massive for that defensive line. So that's something that they would have to address if they don't find a way to keep him. I mean, you know, they'll probably do a Mahomes extension and rip up some contracts and maybe, but he doesn't strike me as a player. He wants to maximize his earnings. So.
Especially, I mean, think back to the start of the season. Yeah. I mean, the guy, I mean, literally missed the first game of the season out there. So in that effort, you got me really distracted thinking about him as the Justin Madubuike upgrade in Mike McDonald's defense in Seattle, and my brain almost exploded. So, oh God, that is tantalizing. But yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth on this because so many of those other guys up front benefit from the gravity of a Chris Jones. He is so much more singularly talented than any other player that they've got up front. And also size-wise, like a lot of those other guys, like, you know, Mike Pinnell, who we shouted out there as a tank against the run, really doesn't show up in the pass game at all. And the rest of you guys you mentioned, Onyedike Uzomah is really long and shifty, but he's undersized. George Karlaftis is not the biggest guy in the world. And so you got a guy that can do so much for you out there. And Chris Jones, and like we've talked about, you put him all over the defense. He's the chess piece up front for Spags in the way that, you know, we've talked about with Trent McDuffie on the back end and all the places they move him sort of as the Kyle Hamilton proxy in that defense. So I don't want to downplay that. While coming off the first game, we said, oh, it seemed like they missed Travis Kelce a lot more than they missed Chris Jones. That guy is one of the, you know, two, three most important players on that defense on any play. So if he's gone, that presents a massive challenge, but you've got one of the greatest defensive architects in NFL postseason history that's calling the shots there. So,
I mean, God, what an advantage it is for this Kansas City team that they continue to bring Steve Spagnuolo back as their defensive coordinator. Didn't get any head coaching looks. And he actually, I think he was asked about it. I was like, yeah, I'd like to be a head coach again, which I was like, really? Because no one, you and Mike McDonald sort of won this season on that side of the ball. Jim Schwartz had a big year as well, but like, no, but there was no rumors about that. But it's a massive edge for them, not just because of his individual game planning brilliance, but because he now has had the opportunity to coach all of these young players we've been talking about. Something that Andy Reid, we had him on NFL Live for the schedule release show. And something he mentioned to me when I asked him about the defense and how they were really playing together well at the end of the last season, and whether I thought that would continue into this season, he was like, yeah, our linebackers haven't gotten to play together yet. We've got a full off season and they're going to play together. And when I look at this defense and I think about like how, like the health, the continuity, the youth, and then the coaching, it really manifests itself on the field. You know, they blitz like crazy. They blitz pretty on like over 50% of dropbacks. But when you watch the blitzes, the way that they tie the rush with the coverage, the disguise, we talked about the disguise McDuffie blitz, they're so well coached. So like when we spin this ahead to next year, yes, losing Jones hurts. And there's a couple other players, Nadi, who's injured, Tranquil, Mike Edwards. There's a few players who are free agents. We'll see who they can bring back. But other than Jones, I think your core players remain the same. This young secondary remains the same. And you are seeing like Karlaftis was a hit, you know, the Leo Chenal had a huge game. So it's hard not to be optimistic about this unit being excellent again next season.
No, completely agree. So for the Chiefs in that vein too, it'll be interesting because defense feels like, all right, you did the job, which was when you pay your quarterback, you've got to hit on a bunch of young guys back there. You've got two legitimate stars in Snead and Trent McDuffie, who are both, I think Snead just turned 27. McDuffie's obviously even younger than that. So it kind of makes me wonder what they're going to do offensively, because I think Donovan Smith's a free agent for them, and they could do to upgrade at least one of the tackle spots. They already paid Juwan Taylor, so that's probably going to remain intact over there. But those were the ones. I mean, interior-wise, you've got one of the best interiors when healthy in the NFL, legitimate studs. You know, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith are both going to be due for a payday soon, and that's going to be a conversation. But I do think, you know, tackle, and then we know the receiver room much maligned this season, are both going to continue to be a priority.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they address receiver. I should have prefaced this by saying the Chiefs actually do have a little bit of cap space. They're about average over $20 million. And like I said, there's some contracts that they can restructure. Now they won't have cap space if they bring back Chris Jones. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I'll be interested in seeing what they do at wide receiver. Also, like the kind of wide receiver that they go after is, I think we all assume, speed. You bring back a burner so that you're not leaning on MVS and Hardman down the road. But and we've just seen so many young, talented wide receivers in the draft. But I don't know. I mean, I like Rashee Rice a lot. He's a really good player. I don't yet know if I see him as a number one. I still think you probably want like a big bodied X receiver for Patrick Mahomes. So if that's possible, I think that would be great, but I don't know if it's possible.
It's interesting because I'm with you. That's probably the case. And you're probably right about Rashee, even though he operated as their number one this year. It does seem like Andy is so thirsty for a good gadget player though. Like we saw so many of those jet handoffs die on the vine. That's what they brought Tony over to be. They brought Mecole Hardman. And listen, Tony was one of the players that helped win it on gadgets around the goal line last year. Hardman obviously has the walk-off touchdown this year, but it's not the most pressing need, but it does seem to be part of Andy's kink. And so I'm wondering if there'll be anyone in a wide receiver class that's got a lot of dudes in it. Like there are a lot of legitimate studs outside of, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze that we talk about as the true one guys who are likely going to be off the board before Kansas City can do anything.
I think because this receiver draft is so good, even picking at the very end, they still have their pick, I think, right? Yeah, they didn't trade or anything. There's probably going to be someone really good still there. Like there's probably going to be better wide receiver options in the late first and second round. So you look, what happened?
I'm just looking down at the wide receiver list for this year. Like there's a couple of sites that have like Keon Coleman hanging around there at that point, Xavier Worthy and AD Mitchell would be the interesting one out of Texas. Burner.
Like I would love AD Mitchell in this offense. Would love it. The Chiefs unsurprisingly have opened as the favorites to return to the Super Bowl.
I will give you your flowers. I gave you some grief about this, but when a lot of people were dumping water out of the Chiefs bin, you did bravely say that they would go on and do great things like this. So you stood up and were so brave and said something so bold.
I courageously stood by the greatest quarterback of our generation. People doubted me, but I never lost hope, even when Kadarius Toney was actively sabotaging football games. I stood by them.
And going on IG Live and actively maybe sabotaging his own career.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let me ask you this, though. I did say, like, I'll probably pick the Niners to return, and, you know, they're both the favorites to come back. Who do you think is the let's do this. Who would you say is the biggest, in your mind, the way too early, biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC, and who do you think is the biggest threat to the Niners in the NFC right now?
Right now, I mean, AFC, I would probably still say Buffalo, like, on their best. Now, it's going to be contingent on, I think, them retooling some things on defense. But, like, think about how the position they were in at the end of the season compared to how they were at the beginning. Like, that was broken down, and Josh Allen did the Super Saiyan thing. The Bengals are super intriguing because you're going to get Burrow back automatically and be a lot better than you were. But
maybe no Higgins, though.
Maybe no Higgins. Like, I'm just concerned. Like, Baltimore should absolutely be in that conversation, but I do want to see, all right, what's the defense look now that you lost Mike McDonald, who's an absolute value add? You've still got freaks all over the place there. Matt Ebike is going to get his bag either there or somewhere else. And so I don't know. It should be Baltimore. It should be Baltimore in the AFC. I'm going to go with that one. NFC. Man. It should probably be Detroit, but man, seeing the way the Rams played by the end of last season, I'm fascinated to see what that team becomes. If they can add like one more star pass rusher on that team and maybe a little bit more help on the back end, they were getting cooked at corner a little bit by the end of the year. Or no, it wasn't them. It was obviously going to be Detroit, but either way, like, they're a few pieces away on that defense, but offensively, they're going to be a monster next year.
Yeah, they're really scary. The Rams are a great choice. I think it's probably between them and Detroit, although Green Bay, too, is fascinating. I'll probably go to Detroit just because they were so close. And I have to look at their cap situation, but I do think that they largely return the nucleus because they're so young as well. And I think they're going to do whatever it takes to go all in and get better. And the fact that they were able to retain their coaching staff is just insane. So,
wait, who did you think for the AFC? I don't think.
Baltimore. I got Baltimore. Yeah. Although the brain drain, the talent drain, they're up against it for sure. That team got pillaged this offseason.
Largely defensively, though, right? Like, it won't be like the Eagles last year, for example, as the Super Bowl loser that lost everybody. And now I saw Hassan Reddick was asking for permission for a trade. Like, the vibes got scary around there quick. At the very least, you're going to have Lamar Jackson back with Todd Monken again next year and some continuity and an offense that took decided steps forward.
Hassan Reddick asking for a trade on Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, who knows when he actually asked for it, but I respect it. It's actually not a look at me, Louie move. I'm not trying to lead, you know.
Yeah, Sunday news dump.
Just, you know, Aaron Rodgers would never ask for it on Super Bowl. Although he actually, wait, I say that. He asked for his trade or the news broke, pardon me, on draft night. So, but then he was like upset or whatever. I don't want to impute who with the timing of it. Yeah, I'll still go Baltimore and Detroit. I mean, that's the teams I made it the furthest. But yes, and I will still pick San Francisco and Kansas City to get back there. So, Niners fans, I'm really sorry, but know this. I don't think you choked. So you have that going for you.
Patrick Mahomes coming into tonight, 8-2 in his playoff career when the Chiefs trailed by 7 or more points. No quarterback to start 10 or more games in the postseason had even had a .500 record in that particular situation. You ran into a force of nature. There is, at some point, you just kind of look up and go, man, they got him and that's good enough.
Well, that actually brings me to something was sent my way that, so at the very beginning, we talked about Kyle Shanahan's decision to take the ball and the consequent information asymmetry. And Chiefs, they stop them. The Chiefs, pardon me, hold San Francisco to a field goal. Then they know that they have all four downs, score a touchdown, that they need to, you know. Kyle Shanahan, after the game, said that they elected to take the ball because if the game had been tied, it goes to sudden death, and they would have had the ball, which is something we didn't mention at the beginning. Of course, so there that logic, there's definitely, we talked about the maybe your defense being tired being the reason. That there's logic to that. However, you're betting that you can stop Patrick Mahomes. I think that's, you know, I mean, you would have to stop him anyways, obviously, but you're betting that you can stop Patrick Mahomes with four downs.
Do you think, and because we're learning about this limited sample size with this new overtime, right? Obviously, yeah. In this space, and you mentioned
it's the first time, it's the only time.
So, and with Patrick Mahomes as the only quarterback on the other side, do you think because of this, we'll see more teams opt to say, hey, we want to, you know, get the ball second? Or will most teams look and say, hey, 31 other teams don't have Patrick Mahomes. And so if you're not playing him or Burrow or Lamar or one of those guys, do you think there might still be some teams that strategically say we'd rather have the ball in terms of the tie?
I think it's really going to be game to game, team to team, whether it's going to play a huge role in this. So our colleague Seth Walder, who does a great job doing analytics for ESPN, surveyed a bunch of analytics departments around the league and got like a 50-50 split. Like, it was wildly different results, which, by the way, suggests that it's a good system, because what the league wanted was, they didn't want the repeat of Allen Mahomes, obviously, where one quarterback doesn't get the chance. And I think ideally you want a decision that's not obvious. And it truly seems like this is not obvious. I would still take the ball second and then, you know, maybe go for 2 to win, but you know, it's, I don't think it's entirely obvious. I think it really depends on the strength of your unit versus theirs. And the weather.
God, the ball second and go for 2 to win. You really have appeared on First Take a lot. You just want to watch the world burn on a Monday near you, don't you?
Can you imagine? I actually, if they had scored, even though I would do it, I wouldn't want them to do it, because just the takes, and it would just be too much.
The discourse would have been absolutely night. If we took Dan Campbell to task for that game, I can only imagine what we'd do in the effing Super Bowl with Kyle Shanahan as the actor.
Oh God, or Reed. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no bad actors here. Michael Jr., thank you so much for joining me to recap what ended up being a pretty damn exciting Super Bowl. You guys can check out Michael Jr. on Gojo and Golic. That's what it's called now, right? Yep. Gojo and Golic. Yes, I got it right. Yes. Excellent podcast. Sometimes I'm on from now and then. Also, you can check it out on YouTube, as you can check out this podcast if you're listening to it on YouTube at youtube.com/@MeaningKimes. We are going to be back next week and start draft season with Field Yates. Also, a little bit of an announcement. Starting this week on Valentine's Day, my friend David Dennis Jr. and I are going to be recapping Love is Blind on YouTube. And you girls already seen the first 9 episodes and they're amazing. So.
All right. I'm going to openly politic for an appearance on this at some point, because I know you have seen some of these episodes and the little morsels I've gotten from you have me very excited.
Those will be on YouTube. This show's on YouTube. And of course, if you're listening to it, it's available as a podcast. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in this season. It's been a fun one. I am taking the second episode of this week off, where we're going down to one episode a week in the off season. So the next episode will be the following week. One more thing. Thank you to everyone who joined us in Las Vegas for the live show. Really appreciated all of you coming. At one point in the game, I very much so regretted not making Juwan Jennings my firm commitment as an X-Factor. But yeah, it was a really fun time and I enjoyed meeting you all. So until next week.